Chapter 17. Laid them out, it struck him that she studied them quite as rapidly as he could spread them. He slyly glanced up from the outer corner of his eye to hers, and noticed that all she did was look at the name at the bottom of the letter, and then put the enclosure aside without further ceremony. He thought this an odd way of inquiring into the merits of 45 men who, at considerable trouble, gave in detail reasons why they believed themselves well qualified for a certain post. She came to the final one, and put it down with the rest. Then the lady said that in her opinion it would be best to get as many replies as they possibly could, before selecting to give us a wider choice. What do you think, Mr. Nyttleton? Apostrophe, it seemed to him, he said, that a greater number than those they already had would scarcely be necessary, and if they waited for more, there would be this disadvantage attending it, that some of those they now could command would possibly not be available. Never mind, we will run that risk, apostrophe said Miss Aldcliffe. Let the advertisement be inserted once more, and then we will certainly settle the matter. Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Nyttleton bowed, and seemed to think Miss Aldcliffe, for a single woman, and one who till so very recently had never concerned herself with business of any kind, a very meddlesome client. But she was rich, and handsome still. She's a new broom in estate management as yet, apostrophe he thought. She will soon get tired of this, apostrophe and he parted from her without a sentiment which could mar his habitual blandness. The two ladies then proceeded westward. Dismissing the cab in Waterloo Place, they went along Pall Mall on foot, where in place of the usual well-dressed clubbists rubicund with alcohol, were to be seen, in linen pinafores, flocks of house painters pallid from white lead. When they had reached the Green Park, Cytherea proposed that they should sit down a while under the young elms at the brow of the hill. This they did, the growl of Piccadilly on their left and the monastic seclusion of the palace on their right. Before them, the clock tower of the Houses of Parliament, standing forth with a metallic luster against a livid Lammeth sky. Miss Aldcliffe still carried in her hand a copy of the newspaper, and while Cytherea had been interesting herself in the picture around, glanced again at the advertisement. She heaved a slight sigh, and began to fold it up again. In the action her eye caught sight of two consecutive advertisements on the cover, one relating to some lecture on art, and addressed to members of the Institute of Architects. The other emanated from the same source, but was addressed to the public, and stated that the exhibition of drawings at the Institute's rooms would close at the end of that week. Her eye lighted up. She sent Cytherea back to the hotel in a cab, then turned round by Piccadilly into Bond Street, and proceeded to the rooms of the Institute. The secretary was sitting in the lobby. After making her payment, and looking at a few of the drawings on the walls, in the company of three gentlemen, the only other visitors to the exhibition, she turned back, and asked if she might be allowed to see a list of the members. She was a little connected with the architectural world, she said, with a smile, and was interested in some of the names. Here it is, madam, apostrophe he replied, politely handing her a pamphlet containing the names. Miss Aldcliffe turned the leaves till she came to the letter M. The name she hoped to find there was there, with the address appended, as was the case with all the rest. The address was at some chambers in a street not far from Charing Cross. Chambers, apostrophe as a residence, had always been assumed by the lady to imply the condition of a bachelor. She murmured two words, there still. Apostrophe apostrophe, another request had yet to be made, but it was of a more noticeable kind than the first, and might compromise the secrecy with which she wished to act throughout this episode. Her object was to get one of the envelopes lying on the secretary's table, stamped with the die of the Institute, and in order to get it, she was about to ask if she might write a note. But the secretary's back chanced to be turned, and he now went towards one of the men at the other end of the room, who had called him to ask some question relating to an etching on the wall. quick as thought, Miss Alcliffe stood before the table, slipped her hand behind her, took one of the envelopes, and put it in her pocket. She sauntered round the rooms for 2 or 3 minutes longer, then withdrew and returned to her hotel. Here she cut the Knapwater advertisement from the paper, put it into the envelope as he had stolen, embossed with the society's stamp, and directed it in a round clerkly hand to the address as he had seen in the list of members' names submitted to her. Enias Manston, Esq., Wykeham Chambers, Spring Gardens. This ended her first day's work in London. 4. From August the 26th to September the 1st, the two Cytherias continued at the Westminster Hotel, Miss Alcliffe informing her companion that business would detain them in London another week. The days passed as slowly and quietly as days can pass in a city at that time of the year, the shuttered windows about the squares and terraces confronting their eyes like the white and sightless orbs of blind men. On Thursday Mr. Nyttleton called, bringing the whole number of replies to the advertisement. Cytherea was present at the interview, by Miss Alcliffe's request either from whim or design. 10 additional letters were the result of the second week's insertion, making 55 in all. Miss Alcliffe looked them over as before. One was signed, Enias Manston, 133 Turngate Street, Liverpool. Now then, Mr. Nyttleton, will you make a selection, and I will add one or two, apostrophe Miss Alcliffe said. Mr. Nyttleton scanned the whole heap of letters, testimonials, and references, sorting them into two heaps. Manston's missive, after a mere glance, was thrown amongst the summarily rejected ones. Miss Alcliffe read, or pretended to read after the lawyer. When he had finished, 5 lay in the group he had selected. Would you like to add to the number? Apostrophe apostrophe he said, turning to the lady. No, apostrophe she said carelessly. Well, 2 or 3 additional ones rather took my fancy, apostrophe she added, searching for some in the larger collection. She drew out 3. One was Manston's. These 8, then, shall be communicated with, apostrophe said the lawyer, taking up the 8 letters and placing them by themselves. They stood up. If I myself, Miss Alcliffe, were only concerned personally, apostrophe he said, in an offhand way, and holding up a letter singly, I should choose this man unhesitatingly. He writes honestly, is not afraid to name what he does not consider himself well acquainted with a rare thing, to find in answers to advertisements. He is well recommended, and possesses some qualities rarely found in combination. Oddly enough, he is not really a steward. He was bred a farmer, studied building affairs, served on an estate for some time, then went with an architect, and is now well qualified as architect, estate agent, and surveyor. That man is sure to have a fine head for a manor like yours. Apostrophe apostrophe he tapped the letter as he spoke. Yes, I should choose him without hesitation speaking personally. Apostrophe apostrophe, and I think, apostrophe she said artificially, I should choose this one as a matter of mere personal whim, which, of course, can't be given way to when practical questions have to be considered. Apostrophe apostrophe, Cytherea, after looking out of the window, and then at the newspapers, had become interested in the proceedings between the clever Miss Alcliffe and the keen old lawyer, which reminded her of a game at cards. She looked inquiringly at the 2 letters, one in Miss Alcliffe's hand, the other in Mr. Nyttleton's. What is the name of your man? Apostrophe apostrophe said Miss Alcliffe. His name apostrophe said the lawyer, looking down the page. What is his name? It is Edward Springrove. Apostrophe, Miss Alcliffe glanced towards Cytherea, who was getting red and pale by turns. She looked imploringly at Miss Alcliffe. The name of my man, apostrophe said Miss Alcliffe, looking at her letter in turn, is, I think, Yesenia's Manston. Apostrophe apostrophe 5. September the 3rd, the next morning, but one was appointed for the interviews, which were to be at the lawyer's offices. Mr. Middleton and Mr. Tailing were both in town for the day, and the candidates were admitted one by one into a private room. In the window recess was seated Miss Aldcliffe, wearing her veil down. The lawyer had, in his letters to the selected number, timed each candidate at an interval of 10 or 15 minutes from those preceding and following. They were shown in as they arrived, and had short conversations with Mr. Middleton terse, and to the point. Miss Aldcliffe neither moved, nor spoke during this proceeding. It might have been supposed that she was quite unmindful of it, had it not been for what was revealed by a keen penetration of the veil covering her countenance, the rays from two bright black eyes, directed towards the lawyer and his interlocutor. Springrove came fifth, Manston seventh. When the examination of all was ended, and the last man had retired, Middleton, again as at the former time, blandly asked his client which of the eight she personally preferred. I still think the fifth we spoke to, Springrove, the man whose letter I pounced upon at first, to be by far the best qualified, in short, most suitable generally. I am sorry to say that I differ from you. I lean to my first notion still that Mr. Manston is most desirable in tone and bearing, and even specifically, I think he would suit me best in the long run. Mr. Middleton looked out of the window at the whitened wall of the court. Of course, madam, your opinion may be perfectly sound and reliable. A sort of instinct, I know, often leads ladies by a shortcut to conclusions truer than those come to by men after laborious roundabout calculations, based on long experience. I must say I shouldn't recommend him. Why, pray? Well, let us look first at his letter of answer to the advertisement. He didn't reply till the last insertion, that's one thing. His letter is bold and frank in tone, so bold and frank that the second thought after reading it is that not honesty, but unscrupulousness of conscience dictated it. It is written in an indifferent mood, as if he felt that he was humbugging us in his statement, that he was the right man for such an office, that he tried hard to get it only as a matter of form which required that he should neglect no opportunity that came in his way. You may be right, Mr. Middleton, but I don't quite see the grounds of your reasoning. He has been, as you perceive, almost entirely used to the office duties of a city architect, the experience we don't want. You want a man whose acquaintance with rural landed properties is more practical and closer, somebody who, if he has not filled exactly such an office before, has lived a country life, knows the ins and outs of country tenancies, building, farming, and so on. He's by far the most intellectual looking of them all. Yes, he may be your opinion, Miss Aldcliffe, is worth more than mine in that matter. And more than you say, he is a man of parts. His brain power would soon enable him to master details and fit him for the post. I don't much doubt that. But to speak clearly here, his words started off at a jog trot. I wouldn't run the risk of placing the management of an estate of mine in his hands on any account whatever. There, that's flat and plain, madam. She said, with a show of impatience, what is your reason? He is a voluptuary with activity, which is a very bad form of man, as bad as it is rare. Oh, thank you for your explicit statement, Mr. Middleton, said Miss Aldcliffe, starting a little and flushing with displeasure. Mr. Middleton nodded slightly, as a sort of neutral motion, simply signifying a receipt of the information, good or bad. And I really think it is hardly worth while to trouble you further in this, continued the lady. He's quite good enough for a little insignificant place like mine at Knapwater, and I know that I could not get on with one of the others for a single month. We'll try him. Certainly, Miss Aldcliffe, said the lawyer. and Mr. Manston was written to the effect that he was a successful competitor. Did you see how unmistakably her temper was getting the better of her that minute you were in the room? Said Nyttelton to Tailing, when their client had left the house. Nyttelton was a man who surveyed everybody's character in a sunless and shadowless northern light. A culpable slyness, which marked him as a boy, had been molded by time, the improver, into honorable circumspection. We frequently find that the quality which, conjoined with the simplicity of the child, is vice, is virtue when it pervades the knowledge of the man. She was as near as damn it to boiling over when I added up her man, continued Nyttelton. His handsome face is his qualification in her eyes. They have met before, I saw that. He didn't seem conscious of it, said the junior. He didn't. That was rather puzzling to me. But still, if ever a woman's face spoke out plainly that she was in love with a man, hers did that she was with him. Poor old maid, she's almost old enough to be his mother. If that Manston's a schemer, he'll marry her, as sure as I am Nyttelton. Let's hope he's honest, however. I don't think she's in love with him, said Tailing. He had seen but little of the pair, and yet he could not reconcile what he had noticed in Miss Aldclyffe's behavior with the idea that it was the bearing of a woman towards her lover. Well, your experience of the fiery phenomenon is more recent than mine, rejoined Nyttelton carelessly. And you may remember the nature of it best. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.